Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. I recorded the talk given by the Jew Ronnie Kasrils on the 25th of January 2020. I just want to take you to a place where he was discussing the murder of a white girl here in Johannesburg in 1949. The girl's name, she's known as Bubbles Schroeder. Her real name is Jacoba Schroeder. She was an Afrikaans girl who lived here in Johannesburg. She was known as a good time girl. She seems to have been a kind of a party girl of her time. But what is interesting is Kasrils mentions that this girl, Bubbles Schroeder, was with three Jews on the night that she died. And they were the main suspects. And so he's written something about that. I don't know what he's written. And he talks about another Jew who was one of the three suspects who now wants to write a book about it. This girl died in 1949. But this is a celebrated unsolved case here in South Africa. And the main suspects were all Jews. So just listen to what he says. My commentary follows after this.
And commentators then are absolutely amazed at the way I depict the head, St. John B. Nitch, because they never got caned by him. So I'm saying, well, you being in that study with me, and there are guys who agree with me. So, you know, there's one thing that everybody says, absolute lies, this, that, and the other. They're sufficient. People, I write about the murder of Bubbles Schroeder, which was the celebrated case in 1949 of this young Afrikaans playgirl who gets picked up. And she's always at the Turfontein races by three Jewish guys who live out at Ilova. And
one of the wives of those.
Pardon?
One wife still does.
Of those three guys, Liebman, Bolchek, and Polanski. So this guy's contacted me now. One of the accused, the three of them were accused because they partied with her that night. And then they squabbled and she was dropped off in Dunkeld. In those days, it was just plantations around from Ilova and so on. And her body was found strangled the next day. So the three guys who had partied with her were arrested. And they were found not guilty. No one was ever discovered. But I deal with that aspect because as a 12-year-old, I shared a room with Jaime Liebman, who was number one accused. And we were down in Nuremberg. I was there with my parents. He was there as a guest of the hotel owners. He'd been just released from prison. So I got to know him. But I never saw him again until the other day. He phoned the publisher to say he wants to see me because he's going to write his memoir and he wants to talk to me about it.
Ryan Asinopoulos wrote Bubbles. She wrote a book about Bubbles. I've actually got it on my shelf. I'll show you.
She did
write it. And Mrs. Bilchik is going
strong. Oh, really? Yeah.
Then another point that he raises, which is not really related to the war, is he talks about a woman called Bubbles Schroeder. And he talks about the fact that she was murdered. And when this girl was murdered, there were three Jews who were last seen with her. Now, Bubbles Schroeder is actually an Afrikaans girl. And she was murdered, I think, in about 1949. Now, this girl, Bubbles Schroeder, was an Afrikaans girl. And she became something of a, quote, good time girl. And she was hobnobbing and partying with people, including Jews. And she also spent some time living with Jewish men. Now, Bubbles Schroeder was murdered in 1949. Now, Ronnie Kasrils mentions that when she was murdered, she was last seen with three Jews, and that the crime is unsolved, and that one of the Jews is still alive. And he mentioned in the talk that this Jew contacted him and this Jew wants to write a book, apparently, I think, about Bubbles Schroeder and the murder. because this is now an unsolved murder. Now, those of you who are used to looking into Jewish crimes, you'll know that Jews have committed crimes and gotten away with them. A excellent example in the United States is the murder of Mary Fagan. And Mary Fagan was a young white girl who worked for a Jew. And Mary Fagan went to collect her $1.20 or so from the Jew, and then she was murdered. And when she was murdered, they established that she'd been molested sexually. And the Jew denied committing the crime. And the Jew even blamed a black man who worked for him. But the Jew was later lynched by Americans after he'd gone on trial and been found guilty. But the reason they went and lynched him was because all the Jews and powerful Jews all across America were gathering together to try and get this Jew off the hook of the crime of murder, of which he'd been found guilty. They were going to have this whole thing rolled back. So some senior Americans basically took the law into their own hands, knowing that even though he's gone to trial, been found guilty, these Jews are going to organize it, that he's going to get off the hook. So then some high-ranking guys organized the seizure of this Jew, and they went and killed him. They lynched him. And I have no problem with that, because he'd been on trial, he'd gone through the proper process, he had been found guilty, and the Jews were now using their political connections to try and roll things back and get him off the hook. And you will know from the Jewish Talmud that if a Jew commits a crime against a non-Jew, including a murder, the Jews don't regard it as a crime. So it is very suspicious that in South Africa, that when Bubbles Schroeder died, she was last seen with three Jewish men. I went and I did a little bit of research into it, and it turns out that when she was found dead in Orange Grove, I think it was, all the areas that she was involved in and traveled through were places where Jews lived. Just like you heard in the discussion, Yeovil, and Orange Grove is right next to Yeovil. All of these are Jewish suburbs in South Africa, or used to be Jewish suburbs. Some of them are now black. Anyway, the bottom line is that when the police at the time investigated this, they found that really there were only three people who could be linked to her murder, and it was the three Jews who'd been with her the night before. So the South African police basically made a case and took this thing to court, saying that these three Jews, either one or more of them, were involved in the crime. But in the end, the Jews got off the hook. And so this remains an unsolved murder in South Africa. But like I say, all the circumstantial evidence pointed to the fact that it had to be those Jews. One or more of them was involved in it. She was actually dropped off at a place, and she was found murdered not far from that place. And one of the Jews had said he'd taken her and dropped her off on a road nearby. So now one of those three Jews is still alive. All of those Jews went on to become very wealthy in South Africa, and I came across mention that one of the Jews owned a company, and somebody in that company discovered fraud. And then what happened was the person who had discovered the fraud in the Jew's company, that person was murdered, and I think also an unsolved murder. So there have been suspicions in South Africa that a Jew, at least one or more Jews, was involved in the murder of Bubbles Schroeder. But now this final remaining Jew is going to write a book. So you can bet your bottom dollar the Jew is busy and he's going to try to mislead people away from the Jews. Jews themselves cover up each other's crimes, and I strongly suspect, from what I've been reading, I strongly suspect that many people in South Africa who looked into the Bubbles Schroeder case were quite convinced that Jews were involved in it. But Jews are very careful to hide their crimes. And you get the same thing with Jack the Ripper, for example. Jack the Ripper was a Polish Jew. And the British police concluded that it was a Polish Jew, and they put him into an insane asylum. And once they did that, the British police were so convinced they had their man that they stood down all their policemen from the areas where the murders had taken place, because they were so convinced they'd gotten the murderer. And after they'd put this guy away in an insane asylum, there were no more Jack the Ripper murders in London. But you won't hear anybody in the mass media coming out and talking about this stuff. It's all hushed up. And I even came across instances where people actually had DNA from that time, and they had it tested, and it actually pointed to this Jew. And another weird thing about Jack the Ripper is that the British put the crime records relating to Jack the Ripper, they classified it and held it in secret for 100 years. 100 years. You'll find a similar thing with the John F. Kennedy assassination. My own suspicion is that any time Jews are involved in some kind of killing, then you'll see all kinds of weird stuff as they try to hide it, try to use secrecy to stop the facts from getting out to the public, etc., etc. So my suspicion is that Bubbles Schroeder in South Africa is an example of Jews who murdered a white girl, and the Jews are making sure that the evidence apparently exonerates them. They will go to great lengths. And just like with Mary Fagan in America, the Jews have been lying about Mary Fagan for over 100 years. Rest assured, they'll do the same on the Bubbles Schroeder issue. Last year, before I went to America, I was looking through various books that I had to do with crimes and atrocities to see if there were any things that I could spot that related to Jews. And actually, in a book on South African crimes, I found 2 murders that were related to Jews that were very interesting. One had to do with an Afrikaans woman who murdered a Jew that she'd married, and the reason she murdered him was because he basically had set her up so that she would lose her farm, which was her only source of income. And then there was another fascinating case of a Jew in Johannesburg whose wife was mysteriously murdered. The Jew claimed that blacks did it, but there was no evidence pointing to the blacks. This was under apartheid, and the police did look into the issue of whether blacks had murdered the Jew's wife, and they found no evidence. The evidence only seemed to relate to this Jew, and this Jew went to unbelievable lengths to make up all kinds of stories, weird stories. So those were 2 stories that I came across that I thought at some point I will make a video about those 2 cases, because they're very interesting, especially the one where the Jew must have murdered his own wife. That one is really interesting, and it was in Johannesburg. And also, just like Bubbles Schroeder, ends up being a case of nobody can find the perpetrator. The perpetrator disappears. But in that particular case, the guy was very wealthy, and there were many weird things in that case. And I suspect that he murdered her. Jews are very touchy on issues like murder because of things that happened in Europe in the past, and they know that if Jews are implicated, people start looking at them more closely. And so they go to tremendous lengths to hide things where they were involved in, because they know it will piss white people off. And just for the record, in Europe, for a long time in Europe, Jews were regarded as so unreliable as witnesses. They used to lie so much in court that for a long period of time in Europe, Jewish testimony was not allowed in a court of law. Jews were regarded as such arrant liars. Okay, let's take a look at two disputed murders, both involving Jews. The one is the murder of Mary Fagan, the other one is of Bubbles Schroeder. The girl that you see on the left here, this is Mary Fagan in America, and she died over 100 years ago. And the girl on the right is known as Bubbles Schroeder. Her real name is Yakuba Schroeder, and she died here in Johannesburg in 1949. In both of these murders, there are Jews involved. In the case of Mary Fagan, there's one Jew, and there was also a black accused, but the black wasn't responsible. In the South African murder with Bubbles, there are three Jews who were with her on the night that she died. Now, Mary Fagan is a young, innocent girl. Bubbles is more of a good time girl, but she comes from a poor background. And she ends up with Jews, among others. So if we take a look, here is a photograph of what Bubbles Schroeder looked like. And here is another photo of her. So she was known as a good times girl. I don't think she was a prostitute directly, but she was a party girl. And she often partied with Jews, and Jews knew her well. Now, in the case of Mary Fagan, this poor young girl, very innocent, lovely little southern girl, and she's murdered. And the suspicions and evidence point to this guy on the left, the Jew Leo Frank. So there's a lovely photo of Mary Fagan. Now, this is an autopsy photo of Mary Fagan. So pretty nasty stuff happened to this poor girl. Isn't she lovely? So anyway, this Jew, Leo Frank, she was working for him, and she went to go and get her bit of money. And it's not like she was paid a lot either. She'd been working for him, and she was due to collect her $1.20. She went to go and collect her bit of pay, and he made some sexual moves on her. She resisted, and she ended up dead. This is another photo of the Jew, Leo Frank. So this happened in Atlanta, in America. This is in the South, where the Confederacy was. And these Southerners did some good stuff, as you'll see shortly. So, with all the evidence pointing to Leo Frank, etc., he tried to blame a black who worked there. But he ended up on trial. He went through the process of the legal process of the trial, and he was found guilty. And he was due to be executed. He was found guilty and due to be executed. If you look here on the newspaper, it says, Leo M. Frank's death sentence commuted. So it says, man facing the gallows. Now, he'd been sentenced to death because they were sure that he had killed this girl. The proper due process had been followed. They found this Jew guilty, and he was sentenced to death. And the next thing that starts is all these Jews all around America, rich Jews, etc., they start getting involved in this damn thing. And the next thing is Leo Frank's death sentence gets changed to a life term. So this is where the Southerners made a move that I think is really awesome. There were senior leaders in the community, and I think one of them was a judge, I think. And these senior guys who'd been involved in this and knew about it, they could see a mile away that here are the Jews coming to save this Jew who'd killed this girl. And these senior people, these senior Southerners, decided that they're going to carry out the death sentence. This guy's been found guilty. He's followed all due process. He should be hanged. And now the Jews are here to stop their guy from being hanged. And this is something that you'll find among the Jews. And you'll see it when we look at Jack the Ripper as well. You'll find that Jews do not give testimony that will implicate another Jew in a crime. So Jews will opt out of our legal processes, which they are part of. They live among us, and when it suits them, they'll decide to opt out of our legal processes and do their own damn thing. And in the South, they could see, good God, we've done the trial, we found him guilty, he's supposed to be hanged, and now these bastards are coming to stop him being hanged. And they're starting to use their political power, and the next thing you see is this guy's going to get a life sentence, and they just decided, no, this is unacceptable. So some senior people, I think the leader of it, I think, was a judge. They decided, you know what, we're going to hang this fucking Jew, and we're going to sort him out. And the whole process by which they carried out the lynching of this Jew is actually pretty amazing. I read up on it, and I was like, whoa, these guys were organized. These guys were so organized, they were so sharp. This was done like a military operation. Truly, the Southerners can go and pat themselves on the back over this one. They went and grabbed this Jew in the jail, and they'd worked out the whole thing, how they're going to get him to a place, and they worked out the place where they're going to quickly carry out his execution, etc. This thing was like a military operation. They had a guy who would do this and another guy would do that, and it was total teamwork. And quickly, they got this Jew out of the jail in no time at all, and they took him to the place where they took care of business. And this is a photograph, one of the photographs of the lynching of the Jew, Leo Frank, on the 17th of August, 1915. There you see the Jew hanging from the tree, and look at all these guys around him. All these are Southerners, Southern white guys, quickly taking care of this Jew. And here you can see another photograph. He got his execution. Jews can play with the rules as much as they want. They hanged him good and proper the way that he was supposed to. They basically followed due process of the law and saw to it that the revenge and the punishment for the murder of little Mary Fagan was carried out properly. So there you got a Jew hanging from a tree. Now, this is also a lesson for you in why Jews are afraid of white males. So here you can see the Jew hanging from the tree, his neck nicely broken. They put a blindfold on him before they killed him. And they've done their job. They've carried out American law. No Jew trickery that's going to get this guy out of it. He's going to die the way that American law said he should die. End of story. Now look here. Here you see men and even young boys. And look at everybody who's here. White males. You see that? White men. White men are here. And the white men didn't come to do all kinds of weird things. These white men came to take care of this fucker because they were completely convinced, having followed due process, that this bastard had killed little Mary Fagan. And this is payback for Mary Fagan. You killed one of our little girls, and we're going to kill you. And look at all these people. Here you see normal white guys, southerners, white males. White males took care of this Jew and removed him from planet Earth. Now, this kind of thing, when you get to this stuff about the Jews being gassed to death by the Nazis on an industrial scale and all that kind of bullshit, that's just a lot of nonsense. I still want to show you how Jews are actually killed. Because even in Europe, when Jews are killed, they are killed often by civilians. Jews do not need to be rounded up and put in a factory and gassed to death in a factory in a long-winded story. To get rid of a Jew is quite quick and simple. And here they went, they grabbed a rope and they got rid of him. And in ancient times and in past times, even in Christian times, they got rid of these Jews. They killed them as they needed to kill them. And even in modern times, Jews are killed by civilians. And one of the best examples I've seen, actual photos of the killings of Jews, is by the Ukrainians in World War II. Jews under the Jewish communist Bolshevik system, Jews had been starving the Ukrainian farmers to death. Millions of Ukrainians had died. And when it came time for Adolf Hitler to invade Russia, the Ukrainians were absolutely overjoyed. And as the Germans were arriving in the towns and cities, as they were smashing the Soviet army, Even before the German army got into certain towns and cities, the civilians were already busy killing the Jews. The normal civilians, white men, white civilian men, just like these guys, some of them with suits, were busy killing Jews. They were killing men and women. They were killing female Jews. They were tearing their clothes off and murdering them because these whites had had enough of these Jews in the Ukraine. It was payback for all their dead, and they knew the Jews were behind it. So the Nazis didn't even have to go and tell those people anything about the Jews. When the Germans got there, the Jews were already being killed. And this is why Jews are so paranoid, is because all of these things are a rerun of Europe. And in Europe, Jews have been chased out and killed and sorted out hundreds of times, maybe even thousands of times. Whites have gotten so sick and tired of these people and their nonsense and their ability to get away with crimes and stuff. These Jews get away with things, the whites get pissed off, and eventually something like this happens. White men come and they kick the Jews' asses and they do whatever they need to do. And if you look around you carefully, you'll see in America, these Jews are doing everything they can to get rid of guns. The Jews are trying to stop all these kinds of things. They don't want white men to be armed. They know. That sooner or later, the white man is coming and he's going to end your game. And it's going to be an ugly, ugly thing like this. So if you want to know about the killing of Jews, here among the blacks in South Africa with their communism, we've seen the blacks doing necklacing, where blacks take other blacks and they set them on fire. They pour petrol on them, gasoline on them. They set them on fire. That's how they kill their traitors. Well, in the case of Europe, the thing that most whites don't know is that in Europe, white people have also engaged in what you could call necklacing. And when white people necklace, the people they necklace are Jews. And that is the really important story. You don't need Germans to go and build factories and stuff in order to kill Jews. Jews get killed by white males. White civilian males like these end up killing Jews. But I've seen photographs of Jewish women, where white men in the Ukraine, they rip their clothes off, they beat them and they kick them, they kill them. They hunt them down, they chase them down, and they beat them to death. That is what happens to Jews. And this is why Jews are so paranoid and panicky. They're paranoid and panicky because they know that they have got this house of cards. And if the whites get to figure things out and the whites get angry, the whites are going to do stuff to them. The whites are going to come and they're going to destroy everything. The whites will come and the whites will hunt them down and kill them. And that's why Jews are so paranoid. They live in a world of paranoia. And it's because they're busy with their naughty stuff on the side. And then later on, when the whites find out, the whites get pissed off and they sort them out. So anyway, this is the lynching of the Jew Leo Frank in America by Southerners. These are your Confederates. These are your racist Southerners. And they took no shit. They weren't going to let this fucking Jew get away with the murder of Mary Fagan. So that's how the Jew Leo Frank ended his life. And nowadays, Jews to this day are still busy lying about Leo Frank and trying to pretend that all of this was a mistake and that the whites got it all wrong, etc., etc. All junk. It followed due process. The people knew what was going on. And this was organized not by some low-level bum, but by high-ranking people in the community. High-ranking, well-respected people in the community organized this. They could see, oh God, here's the Jew. We had him on trial. We found him guilty. He was sentenced to death. And now, goodness me, the Jews are coming, and they're going to get this bastard off the hook. So in this case, the whites beat the Jews to the punch, and they quickly removed the Jew Leo Frank from Earth, and game over. You can't save Leo Frank. We got him. He's paying the price for what he did to Mary Fagan. Now let's take a bit of a look quickly at Jack the Ripper. Long time ago, when I was already looking into Jewish issues, and I was looking at things like the Holocaust and so forth, at a point I came across this thing about Jack the Ripper, that Jack the Ripper in Britain might be Jewish. Now, Jack the Ripper was a serial killer, and this serial killer specialized in killing white prostitutes. And he sliced them up in nasty, nasty ways. So Jack the Ripper carried out his activities in about the late 1880s, I think it was about 1888 or so. So Jack the Ripper was terrorizing London because he was busy slicing up all these prostitutes. And several years ago, when I was busy looking into Jewish issues, I came across the possibility that Jack the Ripper might actually be Jewish. And I found a nice documentary, which I can't find at the moment. It's probably somewhere on my archives. And I found a nice documentary that went through the whole Jack the Ripper case. And it actually explained why the police were convinced that Jack the Ripper was a Polish Jew. So the Polish Jew that is the suspect here. However, just be aware of this. In the rest of the world, they don't tell you that Jack the Ripper was Jewish. They hide all of this. All of this stuff is hidden away, and you don't get to hear this. And they pretend like there's still a whole bunch of unknowns about Jack the Ripper. But other people have been doing their homework, and there's quite a lot of evidence, quite a lot of good evidence, good solid evidence, that of all the suspects for Jack the Ripper, the main one is actually a Polish Jew who was a barber and a hairdresser. Now, if we take a look here on Wikipedia, we see a few things about this guy. His name was Aaron Kosminski. And it says, Kosminski was a Polish Jew who emigrated from Congress, Poland, to England in the 1880s. He worked as a hairdresser in Whitechapel in the east of London, where a series of murders ascribed to an unidentified figure nicknamed Jack the Ripper were committed in 1888. From 1891, Kosminski was institutionalized after he threatened a woman with a knife. He was first held at Colney Hatch Lunatic Asylum and then transferred to the Leavesden Asylum. Police officials from the time of the murders named one of their suspects as Kosminski and described him as a Polish Jew in an insane asylum. Almost a century after the final murder, the suspect Kosminski was identified as Aaron Kosminski, but there was little evidence to connect him with the Kosminski who was suspected of the murders, and their dates of death are different. Possibly Kosminski was confused with another Polish Jew of the same age named Aaron or David Cohen. Real name possibly Nathan Kosminski, who was a violent patient at the Colney Hatch Asylum. Either way, both are Jews. In September 2014, the author Russell Edwards claimed to have proved Kosminski's guilt using mitochondrial DNA evidence from a shawl he believed to have been left at a murder scene. A peer-reviewed article on the DNA analysis was published in the Journal of Forensic Sciences in 2019. However, scientists from Innsbruck Medical University have criticized the paper and its conclusions, pointing to a number of mistakes and assumptions made by its authors. So one of the things that you'll see about Jews is that when there's stuff that involves Jews and where it's controversial, it appears to me that these Jews go to great lengths to start muddying the waters and hiding things. They go to great lengths to confuse the situation, because their big concern is that if a Jew is found guilty of any of these things, that it then starts adding to the hatred that they already have, and the hatred will just increase. And they are afraid. They're afraid of more things, like you see with the Jew Leo Frank getting lynched. Because if you go and you look at European history, you'll see that there are hundreds of occasions, maybe even thousands of occasions, where Jews have been pogromed, and where whites have had problems with Jews and either chased them out of an area or they've wanted to kill them or do something like that. They've had a guts full of these people, they're getting sick of them, and they start sorting them out. And the hatred for the Jews can get to the point where even the docile Christians want to run off and start killing Jews. So Jews are afraid of what happens when the lie eventually fails. And they know that white men are going to come and sort their asses out. And they are very concerned by these things. So whenever something happens and a Jew is at the center of it, other Jews come to lie about it, to misdirect people, to make people think of other conspiracy theories. And you'll find that wherever Jews are involved, this is my view from my own researches, is that whenever a Jew is involved in something, you'll see that it's very, very chaotic. And there are so many problems and so many suspects. And all of a sudden, the waters are very muddied. Whereas in most crimes, it's quite simple. You know, the evidence points to this, go and catch this guy, etc. Whenever there's a murder or an assassination or some other thing where a Jew is involved, you'll see that there's all kinds of weird stuff and all kinds of strange things, and you find yourself getting confused. But it's my view that Jews deliberately come to confuse the situation, and they have to, because if they don't, then people will quickly get to the bottom, or rather whites will quickly get to the bottom of the matter, and whites will say, okay, there's the problem, there's the Jew who is responsible for this, and off you go. And the same is true for crimes, big crimes of fraud, etc., lots of criminal activity. And if Jews are found to be in this, Jews quickly go and help their buddies. And they do this a lot. And Jews also don't give testimony against other Jews. So Jews opt out of our legal system as and when it suits them, which is ridiculous, but this is what they do. So in my view, if you start seeing that somebody wrote a paper and the paper was published in the Journal of Forensic Sciences, that paper must have had some kind of peer review. There had to have been some checking. You couldn't just do this for nothing. I remember coming across this stuff of the DNA evidence back in about 2013, 2014. I saw it for the first time. Somebody had a shawl of one of the victims who was killed by Jack the Ripper. And so they came up with this idea that maybe on this shawl there could be DNA and you could use the DNA. So now it's straightforward. You just go and take this thing. You hunt for the DNA on the shawl because there's blood on the shawl. You find it and you quickly go and sort this thing out. And the white man's science will bring you to a quick conclusion. And then you'll know the answer. So here, for the first time ever, somebody's used DNA relating to Jack the Ripper, and it's an open and shut case. They've found the data and they've looked at it, and they can prove that this is a Polish Jew. But now you'll see others are starting to dive in there, and they're starting to muddy the waters, and they're saying, you made some mistakes here and assumptions there and blah, blah, blah. And so Jews busy getting their buddies to come in, muddy the waters, confuse everybody, so that the person involved is anybody but a Jew. I was even reading that they have gone so far that they've actually reached a point where they have confused people into thinking that somebody from the royal family, somebody from the British royal family, may have been Jack the Ripper. So I will bet you that all of that is just a bunch of Jewish nonsense, Jews coming in. Their main goal is misdirect this away from a Jew so that no Jew is found guilty. These people have to do this because they've got to cover up their crimes. And they know that they're not only having committed the crime, but even getting away with the crime is what pisses off the whites even more. And in the case of Jack the Ripper also, another thing is that he committed his crimes and then his own family, put him into a lunatic asylum. And from the moment he went into the lunatic asylum, there was no more Jack the Ripper stuff. Now, to give you an example of more of the weirdness relating to Jack the Ripper, is take a look at this article from 2011. Now, this is from long before the DNA stuff. Now take a look at this. Before 2011, I think it was in 1995. All the files to do with Jack the Ripper had been sealed, and it was all a closed book, and it was sealed for 100 years in Britain. And that in and of itself is completely weird. Why, for a crime, have the files been sealed for a century? And it's a criminal murder. It's a crime. It's not a military secret or anything. Why was this sealed for 100 years? So in 1995, I think it was, they were supposed to release all the information, all of it. But in actual fact, what happened is, it turns out that they did release a bunch of information, but not everything. So here's this article from 2011. And listen to this. Why is Scotland Yard trying to keep the Jack the Ripper files secret? Like, why? This is just a crime. So it says, four thick ledgers pertaining to the Ripper case remain classified. Why? You may have assumed that modern-day researchers have access to all the official files relating to the Jack the Ripper case. After all, everybody involved has been long dead. The Ripper murders themselves stopped 120 years ago. But the truth is, there are still documents in the Ripper case that remain classified, and it's not a small number. According to Trevor Marriott, a former homicide cop and present-day Ripperologist, these are people who study the Jack the Ripper case because it's become so complicated, because there's so much that's been hidden and so much weird stuff. Anyway, according to Trevor Marriott, Scotland Yard has four thick ledgers filled with previously unreleased information with about 36,000 entries. Marriott claims that these ledgers contain, among other things, the names of four new suspects in the infamous slayings. Marriott has spent 3 years trying to get these ledgers released, and Scotland Yard has fought him tooth and nail all along the way. The latest tussle saw Marriott bringing Scotland Yard before a tribunal to force the release. This shit got so serious that a Scotland Yard officer testified anonymously. His anonymity came because he runs a vital part of Scotland Yard's informant program. The argument being made is that the ledgers contain the names of police informants, and that releasing these names even a century later could hurt the police's ability to get new informants. So anyway, that's the nonsense relating to it. But the bottom line is that more than 120 years later, now it's almost 130 years later, we still have got secrets relating to Jack the Ripper. Why? Why? It was just a set of crimes. It's not national security. And yet 130 years later, all this stuff is being hushed up. And I'm telling you, in my view, the issue behind this is Jews. Because Jack the Ripper is a serial killer, and he's a brutal serial killer, and he slashes up these white girls and he cuts them to pieces. He's really nasty. And Jews don't want that image to get out there. But if it's one of theirs, it's one of theirs. But as you will discover, Jews are very, very worried about their crimes. And it doesn't matter what it is. It's not whether it's just murder. You see the same thing happening with Jews who are pedophiles, who do all kinds of things, modern Jews who do all kinds of other naughty stuff. You get Epstein with the child sex stuff. There was another Jew, Polanski. Polanski, a famous Hollywood guy, a producer, I think. Polanski was also involved in sex with children. He had to flee America. He was found guilty and he flees one country, goes to another country. In another country, he's found guilty, he flees from that country. Polanski has been able to stay ahead of the legal services of more than one country. He's fled every country before they could catch him. And all the other Jews are busy helping him so that he gets away. Jews help each other to get away with crimes. They assist each other on a big scale. So if one of them is found guilty of something, all the others help them. And, you know, this is what these people do. And then if they've got links to people in power, then they start hiding stuff. You'll find that all this weird stuff happens where Jews are involved. Another instance of closing down information is when Barack Obama became the president of America. Before Obama became the president, they already went and sealed all his files about all his personal stuff. He's the only American president whose personal details were sealed before he became the president. It's under lock and key. Barack Obama's data is under lock and key, and it will be, I can't remember for how many years. But his stuff, because in his case, the problem with Obama is that Obama might not be an American. He's not born in America. He might be from Kenya. In fact, many people say that it's absolutely so. In which case, you've got a guy who's become a president of America, but it's a violation of American law. An American president must be born in America. But it may be that Barack Obama is the only non-American to ever rule America. And Jews gathered together and collected $750 million to get Barack Obama elected. Jews are the people who were behind the election of Obama, the first black president. And along with that came the sealing of all of his personal details. And you'll see that there are people that to this day still ask about Obama, where was he really born, etc., etc. And from the evidence, it seems to me he was born in Kenya. He's actually a colored, a mixed race who was born in Kenya. But you'll see all this weirdness, wherever Jews are involved, there's all kinds of weirdness like this. So this is just a news headline from 2014. This was from a website in Britain, and it said, Jack the Ripper was a Polish 23-year-old barber. Aaron Kaminski, a new book claims. And they published this. And here was the stuff when the scientific article was published. The USA Today had this headline and it said, Jack the Ripper identified by DNA evidence, forensic scientists claim. Well, you know, that is what people have tried to do. Whites are trying to get to the truth. And you'll find that Jews are busy obfuscating the truth. So what I've done is I've quickly just grabbed the end part of a documentary on Jack the Ripper. The documentary you're about to see, it's just the last few minutes, was done in 2011. So this is before the DNA stuff. And you'll see that even before the DNA stuff, that already people who knew the case well were concluding that the guy is a Jew, a Polish Jew. You'll see in this documentary that people who were involved in the original stuff actually wrote that this guy is a Polish Jew. What I'm about to show you now is a short documentary. It's going to be an excerpt from the end of a documentary that's about Jack the Ripper. It's a documentary that was done in 2011. And we're just going to look at the last few minutes of it. because in this documentary, they talk about a whole bunch of stuff. And you can see this is serious stuff. I also found another documentary, also from round about that time. And that documentary also came up with the conclusion that Jack the Ripper was this Jew. Now, there are many more documentaries, and I've noticed that in recent years, there are more and more and more documentaries about Jack the Ripper. And I suspect that it's because Jews want to hide the fact that Jack the Ripper was Jewish. That this notion that Jack the Ripper was a Jew is starting to spread too much, and they need to contain this thing and come up with new junk in order to hide the reality. And so the notion that Jack is a Jewish ripper, that may be too much to the dislike of Jews, and they need to contain this thing because it's going to add to the hatred that already exists for them and all the nonsense that they've been getting up to in different countries. So for them to go and shut this thing down is important. But in this particular end of this documentary, you will see that people who were very close to the investigation, men who knew the most about the Jack the Ripper story, that they quietly mentioned that the real killer was this Polish Jew, that he was the real guy. He fits the description. And in the other documentary that I watched a long time back, in that documentary, it made another interesting point, which this one does not make. But in that documentary, they pointed out that Jack the Ripper, that at a point, the main suspect that the police thought was the guy who was carrying out the crimes, that the moment that the main suspect was put into an insane asylum, the commander of the British police in that area, the commander was so confident that Jack the Ripper had been removed from society that with immediate effect, he removed all the bobbies on the beat who were in the area. He did not see any need whatsoever to continue having police patrol the East End of London. He was 100% sure that Jack the Ripper had been put away. And so the fact that the British police, with immediate effect, without even worrying further about the matter, immediately stood all the police down in the East End of London and stopped their patrolling immediately the moment that guy went into an insane asylum, that shows that deep down they knew their man was out of the way. So those kinds of facts are hidden away, and you'll see that nowadays people are trying to make you believe that even somebody in the royal family was Jack the Ripper. They've even named famous authors, Lewis Carroll, they've claimed might be Jack the Ripper, and so it goes on. And I'll bet you that behind each and every one of these diversions and deflections, you'll find Jews are busy trying to get everybody away from suspecting that Jack the Ripper was a Jew. And that is also why this thing has had its record sealed for over 100 years. They don't want the mass of the public of the world to realize that Jack the Ripper, who was doing those hideous, hideous crimes, was actually a crazy Jew. And of course, the other thing about Jews is Jews and their, let's call it, proclivity towards mental illness. That is something that has been raised by people as well, that Jews can be mentally ill. And Jack the Ripper is apparently definitely a mentally ill Jew. and he's filled with all kinds of hatreds and things. And, you know, he's been slicing up all these women. And this is bad publicity for Jews around the world. So they don't want anybody to know that Jack the Ripper, the world's original great serial killer, was actually Jewish. So I reckon that is the bottom line here. But anyway, here is a short excerpt. This is the final part of the documentary, and it focuses on this Polish Jew. And you'll see what these people have to say, and they even point to other people who were closely involved in the crime and wrote their own books and what was said. And you'll see that they knew that this guy was the Polish Jew. And this stuff is all from 2011. This is even before the DNA came, which also reinforced this. So Jews are busy running around trying to hide the fact that Jack the Ripper was a Jew, and they're busy trying to even say that DNA is rubbish. This reminds me of when the Jews were involved in that court case in California with O.J. Simpson. O.J. Simpson, the black guy who sliced up his white wife and his white ex-wife. And he went and he sliced her up, and I watched that trial in with great interest at the time, back in the 1990s. And in that trial, there were Jewish lawyers, and they were busy obfuscating all the data until eventually they got this black guy off the hook. And that's just basically what they're doing with Jack the Ripper, because Jack the Ripper, if everybody in the world knows that Jack the Ripper was a freaking Jew, and everybody will say, oh, yeah, see, Jews again. And the Jews will do anything. They'll tell any amount of lies, rewrite any amount of history. And as you saw with Bubbles Schroeder here in South Africa, one of the accused is already busy working on a new book. And no doubt he's going to be trying to also deflect it away from Jews, even though in the case of Bubbles Schroeder, she was last seen with three Jews. And they can try and blame blacks and others on it, but there's no other circumstantial evidence that points to anyone else. The one main fact is she was last seen with three Jews on the night that she died. So rest assured, the Jews will go. They'll lie about Jack the Ripper. They'll lie about Leo Frank. They'll lie about Bubbles Schroeder. But if you go and you do your own homework, you'll see, man. You'll see, Jews were involved in these crimes. And I assure you, I still want to get back to the stuff about John F. Kennedy and his assassination much later. But I will show you some of the stuff to do with Jews and John F. Kennedy. And there you'll see that the Jews even had foreknowledge that Kennedy was going to die before he died. And all that stuff is hidden. Again, John F. Kennedy, you will go and look and look and run around in circles, and you'll wonder who did it and this and that and here and there. And you'll also say, why was Lee Harvey Oswald suddenly shot dead? And guess who shot Lee Harvey Oswald? A guy called Jack Ruby. And you know what? Ruby isn't a normal name. Ruby is the name that everybody put in the newspapers. But guess what? His real name? Rubenstein. So why did the Jew, Jack Rubenstein, go and shoot Lee Harvey Oswald? Well, that too is all about saving the Jews. And there are even people who've commented on that. So when it comes to the death of John F. Kennedy, you'll see same nonsense. All kinds of weird, creepy stuff filled with confusion and all kinds of nonsense. And if you really go and look at some of the older records, you'll see Jews all around the death of John F. Kennedy. Jews everywhere. Jews involved in the investigation. Jews involved in committees. Jews involved before the killing. Jews placing adverts in newspapers before John F. Kennedy is even dead. Oh, it's just Jews everywhere, all around the death of John F. Kennedy. So rest assured, Jews were involved in that, but you've never heard that. But if you go and you do your homework a bit, you'll see that I'm not just making this stuff up. We'll get back to things like that much later. There are more important things to do. But I just wanted to show you that when Jews are involved, there's all kinds of creepy Jewish nonsense going on. And you'll say to yourself, why is it that there's always confusion about this particular topic? We can catch every criminal. We can catch almost every criminal. But why is it that in certain cases, we just cannot reach a conclusion? There's always confusion in this particular thing. Always. There's never an answer. Well, the answer is Jews. Because Jews cannot allow people to get to the point where they reach a conclusion that may be adding to a negative opinion about Jews. So they go crazy. They go crazy to hide stuff where their people are involved. They will hide the truth about a murder. They've got no concern about the truth. They only worry that the truth is pointing to them. And then they'll lie and hide and do anything they want to do. And they carry on and on. The death of Mary Fagan should show you that they'll lie about it for 100 years. Here is Jack the Ripper. We're at 130 years and still covering up, still confusing the issue. And I'll bet you the same is going to be true for Jacoba Schroeder, otherwise known as Bubbles Schroeder. I bet you that you'll see that they'll come up with a whole bunch of stories as to why all three Jewish suspects are not in any way involved in the murder of Bubbles Schroeder, and that it must be some other guy. You know, who knows? Maybe an alien came from Mars to murder Bubbles Schroeder. Maybe something like that happened. But they'll do anything to get it away from the fact that three Jews were the last men to see her on the evening of her death, and they'll hide that and fiddle with that and lie about that endlessly, I'll bet you. So anyway, have a look at this short little bit about Jack the Ripper, and you'll see the conclusion in a 2011 documentary. And to me, between this and the DNA, both of which reinforce each other, I reckon it's open and shut case. Jack the Ripper was a Jew. End of story. There's nothing further to see here. You can move on. But rest assured, Jews cannot allow the truth to come out. They cannot. The people of the lie have to keep the lie alive. Because if the lie is exposed, then they are finished. And they know that things like the Leo Frank thing can happen to them in the future. The only difference is maybe some white guys will be pitching up with semi-automatic rifles and quickly putting them in the ground. And that's what scares them. Because they know it's happened before, and they know white men have done it before, white men will do it again. So anyway, enjoy this little bit from the documentary. I think this is absolutely the most definitive end you can get.
As for McNaughton's other suspect, the man known as Kosminski.
Kosminski, a Polish Jew and resident in Whitechapel. This man became insane owing to many years' indulgence in solitary vices. He had a great hatred of women, especially of the prostitute class, and had strong homicidal tendencies. He was removed to a lunatic asylum about March 1889. There are many circumstances connected with this man which made him a strong suspect.
What we do know is that Robert Anderson, the head of the CID at the time of the murders, later wrote in his autobiography that not only was Jack the Ripper a Polish Jew,
very interesting,
but that he had been positively identified by an eyewitness.
That undiscovered murders in London are rare. And the Jack the Ripper crimes are not within that category.
The only person who had ever had a good view of the murderer unhesitatingly identified the suspect the instant he was confronted with him. but he refused to give evidence against him. I am almost tempted to disclose the identity of the murderer, but no public benefit would result from such a course. In saying that he was a Polish Jew, I am merely stating a definitely ascertained fact.
To the frustration of historians, Robert Anderson did not name his suspect. But Chief Inspector Donald Swanson, the man who had overall responsibility for the investigation, did. In 1987, Donald Swanson's personal copy of Anderson's autobiography came to light.
Donald Sutherland Swanson was my great-grandfather. The book by Anderson had been found with my great-grandfather's notes in it. They seemed to me the correct and sober reflections of the man, above all, who knew most about the case of anybody, and that what he wrote was genuine and correct.
Swanson had made some penciled notes in the margins and on the end papers of the book, and he named Anderson's suspect as Kosminski.
Both Anderson and Swanson say that there was a witness identification of the suspect.
The witness refused to give evidence against the suspect, and the police were forced to release him.
On the suspect's return to his brother's house in Whitechapel, he was watched by police, city CID, by day and night.
But his family almost immediately committed him to a lunatic asylum. Robert Anderson did not name his suspect, but McNaughton and Swanson called him Kosminski. But who was Kosminski? A careful search of the asylum records by the author Martin Fido produced only one Kosminski, Aaron Kosminski.
The Kosminskis were not a poor family. They were master tailors, and they did make a reasonable living and income in the East End of London.
The family ran a tailoring business in Greenfield Street in 1888, and it's probable that Aaron lived there, placing him at the epicentre of the crimes, and only a matter of 600 yards from the murder of Elizabeth Stride. In 1890, his brother Wolfe had admitted him to the workhouse infirmary, where he was described as having been insane for 2 years. Though quickly released, in 1891, his family had him committed to the Middlesex County Lunatic Asylum, Colney Hatch.
He declares that he is guided, and his movements altogether controlled by an instinct that informs his mind. He says he knows the whereabouts of all mankind. Jacob Cohen says that he walks about the streets and picks up bits of bread from the gutter and eats them, and he refuses food from the hands of others. He took a knife and threatened the life of his sister. He has not attempted any kind of work in years.
It is clear that by 1891, when Kosminski was admitted to the asylum, that he was not well enough to have committed the murders attributed to Jack the Ripper. But that did not mean that he might not have been capable 2 years earlier.
Is it the Kosminski of 1888? We know, for example, that in 1889, that Kosminski had appeared in court charged with not having his dog muzzled in public.
Mr. Kosminski, why did you give a false name?
I goes by the name of Abrahams because Kosminski is hard to spell.
And in court he came across as very lucid. So obviously there's been a great deterioration in his condition from 1889 to 1891 when he goes into the asylum.
The diagnosis I've reached, also taking into account the what happened further down the line, is that he suffered from a form of schizophrenia, which I would call hebephrenic schizophrenia. People suffering from schizophrenia are not more likely than other people in society to commit violent crimes.
There are occasions when schizophrenics can become extremely dangerous. A classic example here is Peter Sutcliffe, the Yorkshire Ripper. Anderson and Swanson both appear to have believed he was the murderer. And they were in the position to know the evidence against all the major suspects. He's one of the suspects who we know was in the area at the time. He was schizophrenic, possibly psychotic. And also, he's of the right age for a serial killer. So Aaron Kosminski certainly has to be high up on the list of suspects for the mantle of Jack the Ripper.
Did Jack the Ripper escape the clutches of the law because his family committed him to an asylum? We may never know. But we have followed the footsteps of Jack the Ripper into the dark labyrinth of London's past. We've met some of the men who the police believe to be the Ripper. We revealed how he was an opportunistic killer who acted swiftly and must have had local knowledge. Above all, we have witnessed the extreme chances he was prepared to take and concluded it was only a matter of luck that he was not caught red-handed at his terrible deeds. And it is perhaps this simple fact above all that explains why, today, his name has become a legend, the most famous serial killer in history.
When I was digging into this Jack the Ripper stuff quickly for this video, I came across mention that Lewis Carroll had been proposed by some to be Jack the Ripper. And I thought to myself, why would somebody famous be accused of being Jack the Ripper? Now, Lewis Carroll is the guy who wrote the book Alice in Wonderland. And there is an illustration from Alice in Wonderland. And it's a very famous classic English fairy tale. And it's actually got a lot of meaning, actually. A lot of these older fairy tales and stories for children, in many times in Europe, children's stories often have deep meanings to them. You'll find it even with the German fairy tales, that they actually have a meaning. And their authors are actually not stupid people. They're actually highly intelligent. And Alice in Wonderland is a great classic of English literature. And the author is Lewis Carroll, and he was actually an extremely clever Englishman. Even though we know him with relation to this particular fairy tale. And I thought to myself, why would a guy like Lewis Carroll be regarded as Jack the Ripper? Just like I mentioned, why would some member of the royal family be regarded as Jack the Ripper? And these are modern things. These are modern things. This is not old stuff from at the time. The police at the time did not suspect anybody in the royal family. The police at the time in London did not suspect Lewis Carroll. This is modern nonsense. And then I thought to myself, you know, these Jews, I've been going through many different things over the years where Jews are involved, and there's a pattern that I've noticed about Jews. When Jews hate somebody, when they hate someone, when they hate a person or a nation, they go out of their way to lie about them. The most modern example being the Germans. Before Adolf Hitler, the Jews didn't lie about the Germans because they were having it good in Germany, just like they're having it good in America right now, just like they were having it good in South Africa in the past. But when Jews hate you, then Jews invent lies about you. And like I say, the Germans are a perfect modern example. If you go and look at stories about Hitler, stories about Goebbels, stories about the Nazis, about the SS, about the Waffen-SS, about the Wehrmacht, you name it about Germany, and you'll find all kinds of lies about the Germans. And that's because the Jews hate them. Now, one of the greatest examples I came across when I was studying stuff to do with Jews, and I've never actually published any of this stuff, it's on my list of things to show you, has to do with the Spaniards, the Spanish Christians. Because the Spanish Christians were lied about on a grand scale to such a degree that to this day, right up to 2020, large numbers of people, including other white Christians themselves, actually believe the lies about the Spanish Christians. And I'll tell you what they are lying about. The Spaniards had a huge problem with the Jews because the Jews paid Muslims to invade and conquer Spain. And back then, Spain actually was not just Spain, but Spain and Portugal as we know it today. The entire Iberian Peninsula was conquered by these Muslims from North Africa who Jews paid. And they were going to go on to conquer into France, but Charles the Hammer, Charles Martel, smashed this Muslim army as it tried to enter France. And so France didn't suffer from being ruled by Jews and Muslims. And something which modern Christians don't know about, and that in itself is another huge topic, is how many times Jews and Muslims have worked together to attack Europe and to invade Europe and attack white Christian Europe. They were enemies of white Christian Europe for hundreds of years. And Jews were living among the Muslims, and Jews were living well. And the Ottoman Empire attacked Europe as well from the eastern side, and they caused mayhem for the whites of Eastern Europe. The Muslims even captured white women off the shores of Italy and took them as slaves in the Ottoman Empire, sex slaves, etc. So modern Christians don't realize that Jews and Muslims have been bum chums for centuries, in fact, and that for a long, long time, their top hatred was Christian Europe. Now, the Europeans in Spain, the Spaniards, they had a tremendous problem trying to get rid of the Jews and Muslims inside Spain. It took them 700 years before they could drive out the Muslims, and consequently, once they could smash the Muslim armies, then the Jews popped out of there. In fact, Muslim ships came to pick up the Jews of Spain and take them off to the Ottoman Empire afterwards. Now, when the Spaniards decided to get rid of these Jews and Muslims, those Muslims are also referred to as the Moors. The Christians realized that Jews were an enormous problem for them and were critical in holding them down. So the Spaniards decided to evict the Jews out of Spain. And the Spaniards made the practice of Judaism illegal. And when they did this, they set up a thing called the Inquisition. And the Inquisition was nothing more than a court of law. And this court of law's purpose was to hunt for Jews and get rid of Jews. Now, the lie that everybody believes, and even Christians believe this about Christians, is that these Christians who ran the Inquisition, that these Christians were busy torturing to death people in the cruelest and most hideous ways. And do you know, it's actually a lie. It's a total lie. It's been investigated by historians. And it's actually a lie. And most everybody believes it, even now. But the scientific evidence is totally firm on the matter, and it's a lie. Yet, that lie is a lie that even the Spaniards themselves don't fully understand. Because the Spaniards just noticed that there's this incredible lie about them that's spreading around Europe. and everybody hates them. And everybody talks about these horrible, horrible Spaniards. But in actual fact, the only people who hated the Spaniards were the Jews. So anyway, one thing I realized as I dug through things is that Jews will lie in order to save themselves whenever they need to. But Jews will also lie about anybody they hate, whether that is a person or a religion or a political party or a nation, or in our case as whites, as a race. Jews will lie about anybody that they hate. So anyway, I was thinking about this and I thought, Lewis Carroll, that's a bit funny. Why would Lewis Carroll come up as a possible suspect to be Jack the Ripper? And I thought to myself, is it possible that Lewis Carroll was maybe anti-Semitic? That he said a few things about the Jews that the Jews don't like? And I quickly went and did a bit of digging, and let me show you what I found. And you will see, exactly as I suspected, Lewis Carroll was onto the Jews, and Jews don't like it. So let's go take a look at it. If you go and you do a search on Google and you say Lewis Carroll, Jack the Ripper, you'll find stuff like this. Jack the Ripper, A Light-Hearted Friend, is a 1996 book in which Wallace proposed a theory that the British author Lewis Carroll, whose real name is Charles Dodgson, and his colleague were responsible for the Jack the Ripper murders. Now let me show you some more here. If you go onto Wikipedia, it says the following. It says, Charles Dodgson, known under the pseudonym Lewis Carroll, was a 19th century British author, artist, and mathematician, best known for his fantasy stories, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass, the latter of which included several poems such as Jabberwocky, The Walrus and the Carpenter, as well as his poem, The Hunting of the Snark. Now, listen to this. Carroll is also responsible for much of the groundwork on modern logic, mathematics, number theory, and cryptography that would later be expanded upon by contemporaries and followers such as Charles Babbage and Alan Turing, providing the foundations for modern computing and efficient mechanization. So in other words, although we know Lewis Carroll is the author of these children's books and some poems, Lewis Carroll was actually a very, very clever man, and his main work was involved in logic and mathematics, and he actually laid some of the groundwork, some of the foundations for modern computers. So there's Dodgson, good Englishman, and a very clever Englishman. However, take a look at what's happened in more recent times. All of a sudden, a bunch of feminist historians. So when you see feminist, read liberal, read Jewish influence. So here it says, implications of pedophilia. Recent feminist historians have suggested that Carroll may have been a pedophile, as evident by his interest in friends' children and his use of cameras to photograph young girls. So this is, here we go. He's a pedophile now, okay? Only why? Because he wrote children's books and he liked children and he took photographs of children. So it goes on to claim that he took photographs of young girls that were semi-nude. However, this was a style of art at the time on canvas as well as film, and Carroll was certainly not the only one. So anyway, it goes on to say that the BBC said some stuff that he had been sexually attracted to minors. Now let me just tell you, that when you go to look at guys like Hitler, you will find that there are allegations that Hitler wanted sex with his mother. Wherever you find somebody that the Jews don't like, you'll find all kinds of weird, creepy stuff being told about them, and there's no real actual evidence. But anyway, let's read this. A photograph was discovered in the archives of a French museum. It shows an uncomfortable-looking pubescent girl in a full frontal nude and highly sexualized pose. Text which accompanies the photograph says that the girl in the picture is Lorena Liddell, Alice Liddell's eldest sister, and that it was taken by Lewis Carroll. It has, however, not been definitively proven that Carroll either did or did not take the picture. Since there are no reported incidents of pedophilia and Carroll's relations with his family friends appear to remain unsoured, the most that can be said is that if he was a pedophile, he repressed any sexual urges he might have had. So Lewis Carroll didn't have any bad dealings with any of his friends and family. So people did not hate Lewis Carroll. However, Jews could have hated Lewis Carroll. On the same Wikipedia page, it says anti-Semitism. From time to time, claims have been made that Carroll was anti-Semitic. This is based on his book, Symbolic Logic. Includes suggestions for establishing a logical premise that to modern ears seem racist. However, the oft quoted, this is from him, all Jews, spelt J-U-W-E-S, all Jews are greedy. In fact, refers to characters from the mythology of Freemasonry. Modern publications of his works retain these statements with a disclaimer in the preface explaining the desire is not to censor his work for the sake of historical accuracy. However, the general issue has been comprehensively refuted by two Jewish authors, N. Cohen in his Life of Lewis Carroll and Benjamin Ivory. They point to his anger when it was suggested that in his distribution of free copies of his books to children's hospitals, he should exclude a Jewish hospital. I think what they're saying here is there was a time when Lewis Carroll, when somebody suggested to Lewis Carroll that his books not be given to Jewish children, and he actually said something like, let the little Israelites read this. Anyway, I'll show you more. So here's a page on Wikipedia. This is the thing to do with Jack the Ripper, Lighthearted Friend. Jack the Ripper, Lighthearted Friend is a 1996 book by Richard Wallace in which Wallace proposes a theory that British author Lewis Carroll, whose real name was Dodgson, and his colleague were responsible for the Jack the Ripper murders. This theory is based primarily on a number of anagrams derived from passages in two of Carroll's works, The Nursery, Alice, an adaptation of Alice's Adventures in Wonderland for younger readers, and from the first volume of Sylvie and Bruno. Carroll first published both works in 1889 and was probably still working on them during the period of the Ripper murders. Wallace claimed that the books contained hidden but detailed descriptions of the murders. The theory gained enough attention to make Carroll a late but notable addition to the list of suspects, although one that is generally not taken very seriously. So, more than a century after this, somebody comes and now adds Lewis Carroll as a possible Jack the Ripper suspect, which the police and the detectives at the time didn't even consider, because it's all junk. So it continues, criticisms of this book. Carroll's recent biographers and Ripperologists have argued that this theory has some very serious flaws. One of the most vocal critics was Caroline Leach, who in a lecture about Wallace's theory gave three main arguments against it. The same method of anagrams can be applied to any number of works written in the Latin alphabet and using the English language without proving any intention by the author. Leach demonstrated her point by reworking passages of A.A. Milne's Winnie the Pooh to indicate that Milne had also committed the murder. So in other words, this anagram theory is a load of total bunk. Okay? She also says, from August 31st through to September 30th, 1888, when those various women were killed by Jack the Ripper, Carol was vacationing in Eastbourne, East Sussex, along with Isa Bauman, a child actress and personal friend of his. Meanwhile, Thomas Bain had severe back pain during the summer of 1888 and was barely able to move. So, it says also, when Mary Jane Kelly was killed, both Carol and Bain were reportedly in Oxford. So, they were nowhere near the murders at any time. And it goes on to say, on August 26th, 1891, passage of Carol's diary reports that he spoke that day to Dr. Dabbs, an acquaintance of his, about his very ingenious theory about Jack the Ripper. Although the theory he refers to is unknown, the passage does not indicate that Carol was personally involved in the murders, as many people throughout England were intensely interested in the case and followed its details closely due to the publicity given to them by the newspapers. So Lewis Carroll was interested in who was Jack the Ripper. Others have also written about this when Lewis Carroll was suspected of being Jack the Ripper. Now we go to a very famous Jewish website in America. This is the Jewish Daily Forward. This is a very old and well-respected Jewish website. And here in 2015, they have this article about Lewis Carroll and his anti-Semitism. It says, Alice in Anti-Semitic Land. And it's from April 4th, 2015. So here are some excerpts. We'll just grab a couple of chunks of it. Most biographies of Dodgson, the English logician and Anglican deacon who signed Alice in Wonderland with the pen name Lewis Carroll, misunderstood their subject entirely. In his new book, Edward Wakeling persuasively argues that Carroll was not a paedophile, as other writers have hastily concluded. See the junk that came from the feminists. And the odd visions described in Alice do not result from drug abuse, as previous biographers have charged. Carroll's statements about the Jews, however, remain unexplained. So let me just pause there. You can see that there is a campaign against Dodgson. Nobody at the time that he lived was against him. He didn't have enemies, but you can see that there are people who've been trying to undermine him. They say he used drugs, and now they come up with this idea that he's a paedophile. But Carroll had said some things about Jews. So if you look a bit, if we go to the next paragraph, it says, in a 1980 review of an edition of Carroll's Symbolic Logic, the American Jewish logician Irving M. Coppi suggested as much. A student of Bertrand Russell, Coppi notes that readers of Carroll's logical examples may be put off by the varied remarks about Jews, that they are sarcastic, either hunchbacked or misers, obsequious, unless very young, squinting, dishonest. They look like goats, have beards a yard long and hooked noses. So you see, Lewis Carroll in his writings spoke about your stereotypical Jew. They are sarcastic, hunchbacked, they're miserly, they're dishonest, they look like goats, and they have beards a yard long and hooked noses. So he said some things that in the modern pathetic world would be regarded as anti-Semitic. Meanwhile, he was just saying whatever it was that he believed. So you should be able to see that there are definite things that Lewis Carroll said about the Jews, and Jews may be getting revenge on him. So another two paragraphs, it says, to establish a logical premise, Carroll repeatedly offers a phrase such as, all Jews are greedy. In symbolic logic, he proffers the following examples among many. No Gentiles, Gentiles being non-Jews, no Gentiles have hooked noses. No Jew is ever a bad hand at a bargain. There are no Jews in the house. No Jews have beards a yard long, and no Jews are honest. So these are examples in this book of his to do with logic, where he's using the Jew as an example and playing with it, sometimes positive, sometimes negative. So all those statements about Jews that this mathematician had, well, Jews don't like this stuff. They don't like anything that depicts them in a negative light, even if it's true. So it says, jotting in his diary about an 1885 children's rendition of Gilbert and Sullivan's The Pirates of Penzance, Carroll noted, it was a very charming performance, and some of them have lovely voices, especially Elsie Joel, who acted as Mabel. She looks Jewish. Contemporary reviewers also praised the singer, but with no reference to any presumed Semitic origins. So you see, Lewis Carroll speaks too often about Jews and draws people's attention to who might be a Jew. And Jews don't like that stuff. They don't like it, man. Another paragraph about Carroll. Carroll saw Judaism as a religion of killjoys. He differentiated between an Anglican notion of Sunday as a day of rest and the Jewish tradition of keeping Shabbat. He once wrote a letter to an illustrator asking her not to work on projects for him on Sundays, adding, I do not hold Sunday to be the Jewish Sabbath, but I do hold it to be the Lord's Day, and so to be made very distinct from the other days. I think Lewis Carroll was also a deacon, so he was deeply Christian as well. So he's a mathematician and he's a Christian, and he talks about the differences between the Jewish Shabbat, which is on Saturday, and the Christian day of rest, which is the Sunday. Old Testament references translate to no fun in Carroll's eyes. Chapter 10 of Sylvie and Bruno contains an even more noxious stereotype. Listen to this. An indebted customer wards off a tailor, demanding payment by offering to double the amount owed each year. Russ Roberts, a research fellow at Stanford University's Hoover Institution, notes, being a tailor was once a stereotypically Jewish profession. Although Carroll does not openly state that the tailor is a Jew, the economist, this is the British economist, John Maynard Keynes, a discerning reader, assumed that this was the case. And he goes on and writes other stuff. But it's interesting, though, that at the time that Carroll lived, that in Britain, that tailors were often Jews. And you'll notice that the Jewish family of Kosminski that they were tailors, quite well-off tailors in London, where their son was a butcher, and their son may have sliced up all those white women. So anyway, those are just some additional thoughts for you. Why would Lewis Carroll be Jack the Ripper? I don't think there's a hope in hell that Lewis Carroll could have been Jack the Ripper. But as you can see, Lewis Carroll wrote some things about Jews, and Jews don't like that. So funny that all these other stories now come out about him. No, he's a pedophile. No, he's a drug user. No, he could have been Jack the Ripper. No, that's because Jews are looking for reasons to lie about Lewis Carroll. And in actual fact, there is another video I can show you later on where somebody talks about how Jews boast about the fact that they will see to it that in history you are treated well or you are not treated well. That Jews actually boast about this. So when you read European and English history, you must be careful, because all the people who were friendly to Jews are highly spoken of. And all the people who are hated by the Jews are spoken about badly. And in the case of the Spaniards threw the Jews out of Spain for 500 years. It's actually only in recent decades that the Jews are going back into Spain. But the Spaniards kicked the Jews out of Spain in a very, very firm manner. And I assure you that if you go and dig enough, you'll say, oh, why was it that the only Christians who tortured and tortured other people to death, especially Jews, why is it that they were so cruel and hideous? Why are the Christians of Spain so cruel and hideous compared to all the other Christians in Europe? Well, it's because the Jews of Spain got their asses kicked out of Spain, and the Jews are just making sure that they drag their name through the dirt with stories that are basically the Spanish equivalent of the German Holocaust. In the same way that, oh, Hitler killed 6 million Jews and he had them gassed to death. It's the same storyline as Spain. Oh, those Christians of Spain, they broke people's bodies as they tortured them, and they invented all these machines to torture them with. They killed and killed and killed and killed, these Christians of Spain. And just like the Holocaust, it's just total garbage, just total rubbish. But that's a Jew for you, lying through their teeth. This race of scum, they lie in order to cover up their crimes. They promote those who are their friends and who work with them and who do the things that they tell them. And anybody that they don't like, even if that person is telling the truth, they will lie up to their eyeballs about those they hate. And Lewis Carroll, as minor as his writings are, Jews see him as an anti-Semite, and they are dragging his name through the mud. So instead of the truth being Jack the Ripper is a Polish Jew whose family are quite wealthy tailors in London, instead you get guys like Lewis Carroll, a mathematician, a Christian, a very talented white guy. You get his name dragged through the mud. Rest assured, Jews at work, my friends. And you'll see the same thing everywhere. In South Africa, Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd, our Prime Minister, the greatest leader this country ever knew, his name dragged through the mud continuously. Why? Because as you'll discover, he also wrote things about Jews, said things about Jews, exposed Jews. And that is why you will find that he is lied about endlessly, just like Hitler, just like everybody else. So add Lewis Carroll to the list of names of white men who are getting a raw deal because Jews quietly hate him. So that's the Jewish revenge for you. These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.